For guys, size matters. But bigger is definitely not better for guys with overdeveloped breasts. The condition is called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. Dr. Lista is a world-renowned plastic surgeon who has perfected the procedure that corrects gynecomastia with virtually no scarring. Visit theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and size up your options for downsizing male breasts. theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour number three of three. It's the nation's most listened to sports talk show. It's Primetime. We are coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. I'm Bob McCowan. That's John Shannon right there. Donnie Meehan will join us, the president of Newport Sports Management. Is he president, CEO, owner,
yep,
top dog, all of those things, right?
Yep.
And Luke Cyphers is a journalism professor at Plattsburgh University. In September 2011, Mr. Cyphers penned a piece for ESPN on the history of national anthems at sporting events. And because we got into a conversation yesterday about the relevance of the national anthem in this day and time, we thought...
No, you did.
All right, so I don't like national anthems. I don't think they should be played. I don't know why they are. They stop playing them at theaters on the way out the door, I think. I don't know that for sure.
No, really, they don't play them at theaters.
But they used to.
They didn't used to put commercials in theaters either.
It's a good point. A lot of things they used to do that they don't do anymore. We'll get to that later on in the program. It's our pleasure to welcome to our program the three-time Emmy Award winner for Outstanding Sports Personality. He is with TNT, and you know who he is. He's Ernie Johnson. Hello, Ernie. How are you?
If I were doing any better, I'd be jealous of myself. How about you all?
Doing great. Are you in town? Have you made it to Toronto?
Yes, I am. And got in this afternoon and set up my office here in the room. And,
beautiful.
Ready to go. I always wind up rearranging furniture wherever I go just to plug everything in and get everything ready. So we're good.
We apologize in advance for the weather. It's going to be like ridiculously cold this weekend. We've had one of the mildest winters in Toronto history. It is. It was actually 61 degrees Fahrenheit last week. It's going to be, and it'll be about zero Fahrenheit on Saturday. So we apologize in advance, but that's what Americans think of Toronto. You know, it's cold in the wintertime.
But the great thing is that All-Star Saturday night is played indoors.
Correct, yes.
So that'll be great. So we're not going to have anybody trying to shoot threes in 0 degrees. So it's all good.
No, we did talk about doing an outdoor game and trying to and mess with the American psyche, but it didn't pass.
Maybe shirts and skins.
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
It'd be a great idea.
In 0 degrees, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the relevance, in your opinion, of All-Star games in general, not just the NBA All-Star game. We know it isn't the same as a regular season game or a playoff game. It's not virtually in any sport. But is the NBA version still, in your opinion, relevant?
Yeah, because it's about the fans. And I think that if you ever lose sight of that and say, well, we don't need to do this because the game doesn't count, then I think you're missing out. This is about giving the fans what they want. Let them vote the starters. Let them put Kobe Bryant in a game, even though he's not having a good year, and also they can salute him. And it's a fun weekend. I've done a million of these now, and I would never say that we don't need it. And I love the format that it's in. I'm not a fan of Major League Baseball's All-Star Game. I don't think it should mean anything. I would hate to see home court in the NBA Finals rest on who won an exhibition game.
Right.
So I think as long as you don't lose sight of the fact that this is all about the fans and letting them have their say and letting them celebrate the game, that it's fine.
You talk about rearranging your hotel suite. I assume you're thinking about doing prep, Ernie. I don't think you have to do prep for the skills or the game, really, do you? Let's be serious.
Well, no, you do, because we have a pregame show and we're, you know, handicapping the field and that kind of thing. And sure. So, yeah, you're always looking at, you know, the facts and figures on how many times these guys have been in the competition, who's shooting what, who's tried the most, and it's all that kind of stuff. And there's really nothing you can do on the skills. There's really no prep on that aside from knowing who the field is. But no, I think most of that's on the 3-point and just on the All-Star game itself. And so you just continue that. And tonight I'll be, you know, trying to keep tabs on everything that goes on in the NBA tonight, because mm-hmm. I keep a log of every game that's played during the season and use that as reference when I need to go back and see how many times teams have played and that kind of thing and who did what. So, yeah, I mean, my prep never ends. I mean, I work on the league every day, so this is no different. When I'm up here, I just kind of shift my base of operation, but, yeah, that's the way it works.
With former great athletes and high-performance performers in Charles and Shaq and Kenny sitting beside you, are you surprised at how well that has worked? And I mean that from this context, that they are not trained broadcasters. They are former athletes. And we know that former athletes have fit into many roles in broadcasting over the years, but this is a little different. Do you look around and often wonder, wow, how these guys really are good?
Well, I mean, for sure. And there's no way you can ever predict chemistry or predict how something's going to work if you put certain people together. I mean, I've, in the course of 26 years in that chair on Turner, you know, I've had some athletes as guests on the show before who you thought would be unbelievable. This guy's personality is so great. He'll be tremendous on the air. And then the light goes on and you think he's shooting two free throws to try to tie the game with, you know, 0.2 to play. And, but with Charles and Kenny and Shaq, it's just been a good fit. I mean, Shaq's been there the last 4 or 5 years, but Kenny and Charles and I have been together for 15. Mm. And I think the show works just because nobody really cares about airtime. Nobody cares about being the star of the show. They just kind of, they're themselves. And if, as long as it's good for the show, we go ahead and do it. And a lot of times stuff doesn't work and it falls flat, but it's just as funny. I grew up watching Johnny Carson and
me too.
And remember how great he was, but I also remember if something didn't go exactly the way it was planned, sometimes it was funnier than if it had come off perfectly. Mm. So, no, we just, you know, we talk basketball occasionally and we talk everything else in the world. And so, it's a real unpredictable, unrehearsed, spontaneous show. And it seemed to have, you know, struck a chord with a lot of basketball fans out there. And, you know, partly, and you know, they watched just to see if Charles creates an international incident.
It's the best.
And that hasn't happened recently. So we were in good shape.
It's the best American sports studio show going. It's better than any of the NFL shows.
It absolutely is. The top of the list.
How much is when you drive in on Thursday morning to the studio? How much is on that piece of paper, or is it just, okay, you got 7 minutes between commercial blocks?
No, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of prep that I do because, you know, I want to find, as I scan articles from all the papers around the country, little nuggets, little quotes, whatever's going on that I can use just as bait for discussion, you know. And so that's part of it. Being up to date on the league is one part of the prep, but the other is just kind of looking for things that, hey, you know, it'd be funny to throw this out there because Shaq might bite on that, and then we happen to have some video of Shaq doing something similar or something like that. So that's kind of the prep. But in terms of saying, okay, guys, let's sit down and rehearse this segment, that doesn't happen, and that doesn't work. And I think we've seen it on other shows, because it comes off that way. It comes off like boy, these guys knew exactly when they were going to talk, and he was going to say that, and he was going to say that. Ours is really just kind of a sit down and let her rip. And sometimes whoever talks the loudest or yells the loudest gets heard. And it's not unlike to me just a bunch of buddies hanging out watching a game. Nobody asked for permission to talk. Nobody in a commercial break says, hey, when this commercial's over, why don't you say this and I'll say this? I mean, the first show that we ever did with me and Kenny and Chuck, I remember Charles asking Kenny what he was going to say about a specific topic because, you know, he knew the topic we were going to talk about. But Kenny said, you'll find out. And yeah. That's been the way it's gone ever since.
And in many ways, I mean, I don't think there's any question that you're the catalyst to this thing. A lot of it depends because Barkley and O'Neill can do whatever they want. But Kenny really, in many ways, he's a real hinge to the success of this show, isn't he?
Oh, you know what? Everybody, and I think part of the success is if you just know your role on the show. Look, I'm dealing with a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame in Shaq. Yeah, Charles, who's already in there and one of the 50 greatest players, and Kenny, who's got a couple of championships under his belt. And there's not a situation that comes up in an NBA game that they haven't been in. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing the viewer a disservice if I say, I think my opinion on this is probably weightier than these guys who have been there and done that. So I think that's the whole key. And those guys all come at the game from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes it work. You know, Charles will say anything. He's always the most quotable guy when he played. Kenny's kind of got this New York street smarts thing going with him. And Shaq is the world's biggest kid. I mean, I can't tell you how many times in a commercial break, Shaq has looked at me and said, you know, EJ, it'd be really funny if you push that Christmas tree over on me if we get like 2 billion hits on YouTube. His whole thing is based on, I could get 2 billion hits on YouTube. He'll be making a little video in a commercial break and say, Ernie, sing the chorus on this song for me. He'll get like 2 billion YouTube hits. And he's just the world's biggest kid. And I think as a player, he watched the show and said when he was done, that's a pretty fun place to hang out, and he wanted to be part of it.
Are there any rules? Do you have it as part of your job to make sure that certain lines aren't crossed? Is there anything you never want to touch?
Well, no, I think the only rule is try to be on time. You know, I think, and a lot of times these guys press that to the very to the very limit. You know, sitting down 30 seconds, 20 seconds before we go on the air. But really, there aren't any rules. And most of the time, the thing that people talk about the day after, you know, hey, did you see Inside last night? And it's not anything that was discussed in the production meeting with me and the producer and the rest of our crew, but it's just something that happened during the night, and we kind of grabbed onto it and wrote it until it just couldn't take any more. So, and by the way, those guys are not invited to the production meeting.
Okay.
And they wouldn't want to be there anyway, because the last thing we want to do is say, hey, we've got this kind of funny thing going on in the third segment of the second halftime show.
And Ernie, they all have ADD anyway. You know that.
Oh, yeah, without question.
We've all enjoyed your work. We're welcome to Toronto. We're glad you're here. Enjoy the weekend. Stay warm. Stay inside. And we promise we won't take the game outside. And thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
I'm going to hold you to that promise. And it is great to be up here. And please don't apologize for the weather. Everybody knows it's cold. We were in New York last year.
Yeah, it was cold there, man. Wow.
Hey. Some of us haven't even thought out from that. So this is no biggie, and we just can't wait for Toronto to play host, and it's going to be a great week.
Give a shout out to your producer and director.
I always do. Tim Kiley is our producer, and Jeremy Levin is our producer, and Steve Fiorello is our director. And it's going to be a fun night. We're going to be at Real Sports tomorrow night for the last night of the regular season before the break, and then. All the All-Star stuff coming up this weekend, so it's going to be a blast.
Ernie, thanks a lot for your time tonight. We greatly appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Thanks.
Ernie Johnson from TNT, Ernie, a three-time Emmy Award winner.
Ernie is a cancer survivor.
He is.
And I was I had the great pleasure of being at one of the Sports Emmy Award shows in New York when he won one of those three Emmys, and he gave... In my mind, the greatest unscripted speech about what being in this business, what being a survivor, and what working with your friends like the producer and the directors and the talent was all about, it was absolutely remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
He is a pro, and it is, you know, I agree with you. You said earlier that you think it's the best studio show that exists, and I don't disagree with you. I think it is. I mean, you know, I don't know Kenny at all. I know Charles a little bit. I saw Shaq down in the Bahamas last year, hanging out on a yacht. But they are, it is a fun group. They are certainly knowledgeable, but most of all, they are unbelievably entertaining.
Oh.
And you don't have any idea what's coming out of their mouths next.
Two quick stories. So when I was lucky enough to, with some help of some very talented people, start Raptors NBA TV in 2000.
Right.
And won. We walked in and they said, what do you want to do? I said, listen, we can do anything we want. Except Thursday nights, we have to go get the TNT show, and we're not giving it to anybody. We're not selling it. That's going to be our cornerstone for the first 3 or 4 years we're going to be on the air is we need the TNT doubleheader, and we need Inside the Game. We need the whole thing. And everybody bought in, and that was a real important thing for the channel early on. The other thing is I met Shaq once as well at Maple Leaf Gardens during the World Basketball Championships in 1994.
Oh, right.
I happened to be standing in an aisleway, and this man came behind me, literally picked me up and said, hey, get out of the way. Moved me 4 feet, put me down, and walked right by. It was this massive man, hey, get out of the way. I was in the players section, so that was it. That's how I met Shaq.
They're all good guys, it would seem.
It was
fun.
Yeah. Oh, no. And this guy, he's the glue. Ernie's the glue.
We'll take the break. We're gonna bring Donnie in now.
Oh, beautiful.
Interestingly enough, and the reason, well, one of the reasons we always like to have Donnie on, but among the reasons why this conversation could be interesting is that Don represents Dion Phaneuf, who was traded yesterday, of course, as everybody knows, by the Toronto Maple Leafs to the Ottawa Senators. It is intriguing, at least in many for many aspects, not the least of which, Dion Phaneuf not well liked by the Ottawa Senators when he was a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
And how does that turn around in a hurry? Or does it? And also, Don represents Steve Stamkos. Don't know how much he's willing to say about his future, but probably very little.
Oh, I'm going to pay money to hear this one.
We're going to ask. Here is the president, head honcho, top dog of Newport Sports Management. Here's Don Meehan. Hello, Donnie. How are you?
Hi, Bob. Hi, John. How are you gentlemen tonight?
Great. Well, listen, let's start with Dion. And I just mentioned to Shannon, there probably was not a more disliked Toronto Maple Leaf in the Ottawa Senators dressing room prior to yesterday than your friend and client, Dion Phaneuf. How difficult might it be for Dion to integrate himself into that team? Or is this one of those things in sports where it's the uniform you put on, not the guy?
You know what? I think it's the uniform. You're absolutely right. And I think, you know, when you look at a competitor like Dion, I think that if you speak to the Senators today, and we have about 5 or 6 players on the Ottawa Senators, they don't like playing against Dion, but they're sure happy to play with him now. So I think that transition is going to be pretty easy. They all know each other well. They've competed against each other for the past several years. And I think they really appreciate having somebody like Dion in their lineup. He solidifies their defense core. I think as most people always want in these kind of trade situations, it serves the purposes of both organizations. And I think in Ottawa's respect, it'll serve them well. He'll really contribute to their team.
The speculation that Dion Phaneuf might be traded goes back some extended period of time. How would you categorize his reaction to this? Was he actually surprised?
You know what? When I spoke to him, he was in transit from Calgary, and he had landed in Chicago, and he was on his way to Detroit, and I spoke to him at length. He was shocked initially. he knew that this always could be a possibility,
right,
given the Leafs' plan for this season. But he was shocked. He's been here now the better part of 7 years. So initially he was shocked, but I think he really appreciated the fact of going to Ottawa. Being in Canada was important to him. I think he was pleased to go to Ottawa. He had a list of 12 teams that was part of his contract in this modified no-trade provision, and felt that being in Ottawa allowed him a chance to win with a competitive team, felt that he'd be a good fit within their organization. And really, at the end of my discussion with him, he was pretty pleased and excited about meeting his new teammates in Detroit.
I made to understand that he had made Toronto his full-time home. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, his full-time home was here, and he also had a home in Prince Edward Island.
Right.
That's more than a home, Don. You've been there. That's more than a home.
It's a very, very nice residence.
Yes, it is.
How does that play into this? Or is this just part of the culture shock that is inevitable when you're a professional athlete and you get traded? You almost invariably have to leave behind some things that you thought you would keep forever.
Well, that was part of our discussion yesterday as well. He just mentioned to me the good memories that he'll have from Toronto being here. I mean, he was very, very proud to be the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It meant a great deal to him. And I think he looks upon that very fondly. And really enjoyed being here. Was sorry to see that the organization couldn't win or the team couldn't win. Matured through the whole process during the time he was here. Got married during this time frame.
Right.
He didn't really have anything negative at all to say. Didn't have any regrets at all. Really just said, the next time we get together, we're going to talk about all the fond memories of Toronto. And really, you know, moved ahead pretty quickly, was pretty excited about Toronto and asked me about the fit there and how I thought they'd move forward and his discussion with Brian Murray. But all in all, in his case, the transition seemed to be pretty seamless and pretty positive.
Don, I mean, this isn't meant to be a tough question, but you have always had a good monitor on your clients, particularly when they play in Canadian cities. Do you feel Dion was treated properly here and fairly in Toronto?
Well, I think he was very mature in relation to the fact that playing in Toronto is almost like being on Broadway, that the level of assessment, the critique process is always going to be there. And he understood that and got it and at times was disappointed and at times probably made some mistakes in terms of things that he said or did. But that's quite common with everybody I represent. And he was showed a sense of humility in admitting that. But what I found refreshing yesterday in my discussion with him is that there was nothing negative about the process, about having any regrets or negative feelings about people or management or ownership in any respect. He was pretty positive about it, which I guess is a nice reflection on the organization itself.
Yeah. Brian Murray said that the talks with Lou began in earnest on Saturday. When was the first? You know, I love these procedural questions. When through this process, did you get the first phone call saying, hey, listen, there's a chance Dion's going to be moved? When did you get that phone call from either side?
We didn't get a call from either side in that respect because they had the ability to make the transaction without getting any consent because Ottawa was a team that was on that list. The first time that I heard about it was yesterday. I was in a conference at the National Hockey League Players Association, and I took a break from the meeting and turned my phone on and found out about the trade right there and then. And Dion didn't really have any advance warning either. He got a call from Lou and then a subsequent call from Brian Murray.
So really, well, we all heard about it and talked about the secrecy of it. You guys were in the dark as late as yesterday morning as well then?
I certainly was, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's talk about one of your other clients a little bit. I don't know how much you can talk, but Steven Stamkos is one of your guys, and there is much speculation about his future. As much as you can, are the conversations with Tampa ongoing?
Yes, they are.
Would you say they're productive?
They're productive, yes, they are. All of our discussions have been productive. They've been professional. And I know that Tampa understands and appreciates the fact that Steven has every right and ability to take as much time as necessary to make a decision in relation to his future. And they understand that. They recognize that. That's his right. And that's really what we're engaged in at this point in time.
I've made mention of this fact before, and it's only relevant in terms of my level of knowledge of Steven Stamkos and that we play golf at the same club. And so we run into each other now and again and have chats now and again. And the last chat we had, and it's not relevant, I guess, when it was, he was getting ready to go to Tampa for training camp, and I asked him about that. And I said, you know, how do you like playing there? And and this is, of course, off the air. This is a casual conversation. He said, "I love it. I like the place. I like the area. I like the team." Blah, 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 blah. Is that the sense you get from him that his preference might very well be to stay in Tampa?
I really don't think it would be fair for me to convey what he's telling me or what his instructions are. I can tell you this, that he's a very thoughtful, he's a very resourceful individual, he's diligent, and he's doing what I believe every player should do in these circumstances when you're engaged in the process of committing to a long-term contract, which would be for the better part of his career, and that he's doing.
What is the difference from your perspective in dealing with a free agent that is as young as he? This is a rarity in hockey for sure, to be his age and be going through this unrestricted free agent possibility. How does that change the game for you?
Well, it is unique, Bob. There's no question about that, to have somebody at his age and have the kind of presence that he does in the National Hockey League. It is rare. We really haven't come across this kind of situation in all of my years in doing this kind of work. It doesn't change the process for any free agent, because we have a long, long list of considerations for players like that are going to commit to an 8-year term. Then there are many personal issues, there are many professional issues, there are many economic issues. And to do this right, I think, justice to the whole process, everyone should take as much time as necessary to review all these considerations so that when the decision is made, you won't have any regrets by saying, well, I never thought of that. I never covered that off.
Right.
I never considered that. And to do our job properly, and I think for the client to be in a position of saying, I'm comfortable with myself now going forward, that I've done all my due diligence. Nobody should make any excuses for doing that. I think you really owe it to yourself to do that in every respect.
Donnie, you talk about economic challenges in this contract, and there are four teams that work in states that don't have any state income tax, Florida being one of them. How much of that is a factor?
Well, I think, you know what, John, it's just one of many considerations.
Okay.
And I think from Steven's point of view, he's not the kind of individual that would be saying to us, I have a priority here, a priority consideration, and it's only money. That wouldn't be Steven Stamkos at all.
The other question I have for you is, what kind of factor is February 29th in any discussions with the Lightning, with Steve and over Steven? anything?
Well, I think it's a sensitive issue.
The trade deadline is a sensitive issue for in this situation?
Well, yeah, I think that that's just a self-evident issue because beyond the trading deadline, there's no possibility to move the player or to move the asset.
But the reality is the only person that can decide to move Steven Stamkos is Steven Stamkos, correct?
That's correct because he has a no-move provision in his contract.
Okay.
How active is he? I mean, the clients, I'm sure, are vastly different. Some will defer entirely to you, just tell me when you get to the end, and some would want to be involved every minute. Where is Steven in that list?
He's very thorough. He's very diligent. He's well thought out. He's really in charge. And I give him all the respect in the world in that respect. He's conducted this process as any player should, in my view, to be fully prepared, to be fully informed, and when and if you do make a decision, you have no reservations about the decision that's being made.
Donnie's given us nothing. He gave us nothing.
Well, he gave us lots of stuff. Just didn't give us what you wanted, that's all.
You know, just brilliant. You're brilliant, Don.
And on that go ahead, Donnie.
I always enjoy being on with you, John and Bob. You're a pleasure. You always ask the right questions.
Yeah, but you don't give us the right answers. That's the problem.
That's all right.
But we love you anyway, Donnie. Thanks as always. All the best. We'll see you soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care now.
You bye-bye. Too. Don Meehan, the president of Newport Sports Management, Steve. One of the top agents in the world.
He'd be tough to negotiate against, that's for sure.
Well, agents are all the same. I mean, it's so
hard. They're not all the same.
Well, they don't say anything. They don't, you know, everything is couched. I mean, at least Donnie doesn't give you one-word answers. I've had agents on to give you the one word, or I'm not talking about that. And that's the end of it.
He's fantastic.
I mean, Donnie talks a lot. He just doesn't say anything, that's all. And sometimes I wonder why we have agents on at all.
Well, we got there's.
You just said we didn't get anything from him.
I know.
We found out how Dion reacted. Yeah, he wasn't happy about it, and
now he's happy about it. The fact, I'll tell you what, the
fact. Do you think it's going to be easy for him to go to Ottawa?
I do. Here's the one thing I would say about Dion. Well, they're in Detroit tonight. So the one thing I would say about Dion Phaneuf has played in Calgary. He's played in Toronto, and now he's playing for an Ottawa team. He's played his entire National Hockey League career in Canada. There is something to be said for that. I know we talked about his offseason.
Donnie said he doesn't want to play
and
anywhere
he wants
else.
To play for Canadian teams. He's never shied away from the pressure. There's a lot of superstars in the NHL that hide in American cities as opposed to living in the fishbowl of hockey
correct.
In Canada. And Dion deserves some credit for that.
Our next guest penned a piece for ESPN on the history of national anthems at sporting events. We will talk to him a little bit about that. But mostly we'll ask him, isn't it time we just stop this nonsense? Just stop playing the stupid anthem. And God forbid we should play. Well, it's bad enough we play one. At the Super Bowl, they have to play two.
We play two every Saturday night against a U.S. team and at any Canadian city.
Yeah, but there's only one U.S. national anthem, and then they play the other song. They have to do the God Bless America thing, too, because one is not good enough for the NFL. We'll talk about it when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Set the table for this conversation. I'm as patriotic as the next guy. More patriotic than most, I think. But I don't need to hear the national anthem before every sporting event. I don't need to hear the national anthem every time I turn around. I certainly don't need to hear two national anthems, and that's what we get every night. The Maple Leafs play, the Blue Jays play, the Raptors play.
Yeah.
Probably TFC, although I've never been to a game, so I don't really know. But I'm guessing they probably play both anthems. Do they play both anthems even when there's another Canadian team in town? Maybe not. I don't know.
No, I would think not, Bob.
So that's my position on it. We got talking about it yesterday, and we were talking about the history of national anthems at sporting events, and why do we even do this? You know, income taxes, personal income taxes, started as a temporary measure during World War I. Ha! You know how that turned out. Luke Cyphers is a journalism professor at Plattsburgh University, and some years ago he penned a piece for ESPN on the history of national anthems at sporting events, and he joins us now to answer some of our questions. Luke, good of you to take time for us. How are you?
Fine. We finally have winter up here in Plattsburgh, so that's kind of nice, a little bit of snow.
Oh, nice. Well, we're getting cold here. We haven't had much snow, but we're getting cold. So, in a nutshell, history of national anthems at sporting events. It goes back to the mid-1800s, doesn't it, really?
There have been anthems played for a very long time. But it really only became institutionalized in 1918 during a World Series between the Chicago Cubs and the Boston Red Sox. If you can believe it or not, they were both. If you can believe it, they were great teams.
Holy cow! Yeah, did both teams lose? Yeah, nobody won that series, as I recall. Yeah,
yeah, right. The problem was it was in the middle of World War I.
Right.
And the attendance was down in Game 1 of that World Series unexpectedly at Comiskey Park. They'd moved it from the Cubs Stadium to Comiskey, where the White Sox played. And the game was actually very dull. It was in terms of the enthusiasm of the fans. It was a pitcher's duel between Babe Ruth and Chicago's Hippo Vaughn. And it ended up being a 1-0 victory for the Red Sox, but there was just a real lifelessness in the crowd.
Right.
So in the seventh inning, a military band that was on hand, and that was pretty common, just decided to start up the Star Spangled Banner, which was not yet the United States national anthem. And when they did that, there was a third baseman on the Red Sox who was actually in the military, and on furlough and able to play in the World Series. I guess the rules were different back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he snapped to attention and saluted the flag, which prompted every other member of the team on the field to put their hand over their hearts in the civilian salute. And it got just a roar from the crowd. And finally, the Cubs general managers or management office had something to sell. So they decided to do that the rest of the World Series, and not to be outdone, the Red Sox did it too and moved it from the seventh inning to the first inning.
Wow!
And saluted military veterans, and all of a sudden, they had a kind of a sensation on their hands, and so teams started doing that regularly in Major League Baseball and kind of set the tone for what we have now.
So it was a marketing scheme.
In essence, yeah.
Sorry.
Turned out to be.
I hate to be cynical.
At the end, yeah, it was kind of the same reaction, if you think about it, when they play a disco beat or a defense chant electronically at, say, a Raptors game. Kind of the same thing. It enlivened the fans, and they then decided to institutionalize it, and it got really caught up in the whole military fervor of the time.
But times change. When I was a kid, when I went to school, they played the national anthem every morning at 9 a.m. when school began. That's what you did. You stood up at your desk and the anthem was played. I used to go to movie theaters, and if you went to the last show at night before the theater closed, if you didn't get out of the theater by the end of the credits, the anthem came on and you had to stand there and listen to the anthem. I got nothing against playing the anthem, but I wonder whether it's something whose time has passed. What do you think?
I would agree with you there. Although, well, Canada's got a really pretty national anthem.
All anthems are nice. You know.
Star Spangled Banner is a pretty bad song.
I don't mind it. It's a hard song to sing. I know that, but
yeah.
God Bless America. I get it. I get the enthusiasm for it, but is the meaning lost on 99.9% of people who are obliged to stand up and sometimes put their hands on their hearts when it's played? Do we really associate why it's being played? I don't anymore.
Right. I agree with you. I think it's become wallpaper. And
correct.
I'm not sure it's necessary. And then it does get caught up in militarism, which for me, I don't think that's the purpose of sports either, is to gin up, especially during times of war, to gin up enthusiasm for that. That's a serious business, and I don't think that should mix with our games. I'm probably a minority in that opinion, south of the Canadian border, but I agree with you, and I think it cheapens actually the anthem and the experience for the fans.
But I think it cheapens. You know what? I think there are moments. There are moments in our history where I think it's important to play the anthem, and we can all think of them. After 9/11, it was, I think, important to play the anthem and to recognize
the World Series between
what happened.
Arizona and the Yankees.
I think there are times when it's important to play it, and whether it has military relevance or reference, I'm okay with that. But we play it all the time at everything without thinking about it. And because we don't think about whether it's played or not played, we don't think about what it stands for when it is played. How's that?
Yeah, I think that's a very considered opinion, and I agree with you. In the early days of playing the anthem, they didn't do it every single game, even in Major League Baseball. They started out doing it on Memorial Day and Independence Day and other major holidays.
Right.
And then I think it became something they did on Sundays, I believe. But in any case, it was limited. And those were some pretty good years in the 20s for Major League Baseball. It didn't hurt the sport. And I don't think I agree with you completely. I don't think we need to have it at every single sporting event.
Well, particularly when you consider now that in baseball, basketball and hockey, the athletes that participate don't come from one or two countries anymore. They come
from all over the world,
multiple countries, and that to me is another aspect that I think has been lost in all of this. So from that perspective, I you know what, it's one of those ones where I think that you conservatively you can sit here and say you love the tradition, pure and simple tradition of playing the anthem. On the other hand, in being progressive, do you sit here and say, you know what, it's time not to do it all the time?
Hear, hear. We are out of time, unfortunately. Luke, good of you to take a few moments for us. We appreciate it greatly. All the best.
Thank you.
Luke Cyphers is a journalism professor at Plattsburgh University, and he wrote a piece on the history of the national anthems at sporting events, much of which he conveyed to you.
Interesting, Bob. When I ran Hockey Night in Canada, the anthems at hockey games are close right to the beginning of the game. So we made a rule that
don't show the anthem.
Don't show the anthems if it is an American-based team versus a Canadian-based team, because you actually get 3 or 4 minutes of content time, selfishly. But if it was two Canadian teams, we would.
Mm.
And it's simpler. Well, so you didn't show it every game.
It was self-serving.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%
self-serving.
Totally. But that's what we did. And by the way, very little pushback on the nights that we didn't show the anthems.
So you and I agree. Luke, interestingly, agrees.
Yeah.
Now what?
Do a poll. Let's do a poll. Let's see what happens.
We'll do it tomorrow.
We'll do a poll.
We'll address the subject tomorrow and do a survey. And then what?
What?
Who do we present it to? Who is the first team? What's the first building to say, we no longer are going to play the national anthem?
No, I tell you what, the NBA does it outside the TV window. The NFL does it outside the TV window.
Well, they didn't do it outside the TV window on Sunday.
But that's a special event, and you would still get the anthem at a special event.
I'm okay with that. Okay. I am.
Okay.
Our thanks to our many guests, Ernie Johnson, Don Meehan, Luke Cyphers, and this hour, Scott Rabb, Brian Cooper, Ross Atkins, John Torrey, the mayor.
What a show.
Lou Lamorello earlier. Oof. We'll see you tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.